Well, I don't know how many of you may have noticed, but ever since the beginning of December, we've really been following the story of Mary. Right? We certainly have talked about other characters and themes, but this year I tried to do it all while paying particular attention to Mary and Mary's experience of the whole Christmas story. We started with the announcement. Right, Mary's told that she's going to give birth to a son and name him Jesus. It's good news of great joy, but as we said, it was also hard news because she wasn't yet married, the baby wasn't her fiance's, and she lived at a time where that was enough to have her executed. And so she ran to the hill country with haste and hid out with a relative, Elizabeth, until it was okay to come home. 9 months later, Mary and Joseph had to travel 70 miles to Bethlehem to register for taxes. Well, there she gives birth in a stable, places Jesus in a manger, and then has a bunch of shepherds pop in for a visit. Again, it's good news of great joy, but that's a lowly way to have your first child. Shortly after that, we read how they traveled to the temple in Jerusalem to offer sacrifices to present Jesus before God. And while there, Simeon and Anna took notice of Jesus, right? They recognized him as the promised one who would be used to save Israel and to open people's hearts and souls to God. And then finally, Mary and Joseph got to hike the remaining 65 miles home to Nazareth and Galilee. That's quite the start to parenting, right? That's quite the roller coaster ride for Mary, for the whole family. But then, like it does with all kids, Jesus seemingly grows up overnight. As Kathy said in today's story, Jesus is already 12, and this is the last time we'll bump into him before he's a full-grown adult. If you were here last week, you'll remember Alan made reference to this story, and today we get to dive into it. But before we do, I think it's just worth noting that these birth stories and infancy narratives, they're quite unique. Soon, Jesus will have disciples, right, who are learning from him, crowds that are following him. Soon, Jesus' entire life is going to become wildly public, and his words and everything he does is going to be talked about all around the countryside. And we're going to get to that. We're going to actually stay in Luke all the way up to Easter. But what we've been doing the last 6 weeks, it's been different, right? We haven't been reading letters or lessons or sermons on the Mount. We've been reading these little intimate family stories. Right? Stories about pregnancy, about birth, about bringing your baby home. There's still lessons in them, but I've always felt like these early stories, the second chapter of Luke, was more intended to be experienced than dissected and understood. And so we get to wrap those up. This morning we have one more family story, one more glimpse into Jesus' childhood. So let's read it together. Once again, from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 2, starting in verse 41. Now, every year, Jesus' parents went to Jerusalem for the festival of the Passover. When Jesus was 12 years old, they went up to the festival according to the custom. After the festival was over, while his parents were returning home, the boy Jesus stayed behind in Jerusalem, but they were unaware of it. Thinking he was in their company, they traveled on for a day. Then they began looking for him among their relatives and friends. When they did not find him, they went back to Jerusalem to look for him. After 3 days, they found him in the temple courts, sitting among the teachers, listening to them and asking questions of them. Everyone who heard him was amazed at his understanding and his answers. When his parents saw him, they were astonished. His mother said to him, "Son, why have you treated us like this? Your father and I have been anxiously searching for you." "Why were you searching for me?" he asked. "Didn't you know I had to be in my father's house?" But they didn't understand what he was saying to them. Then he went down to Nazareth with them and was obedient to them. And his mother treasured all these things in her heart. And Jesus grew in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and man. This is the word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God. Can you believe they lost Jesus? Right? And not just for a minute or two, for multiple days? They were an entire day's walk away from Jerusalem before they even noticed he was missing. And then they returned to the city and spend the next 3 days looking for him. That's a long time to be in a city by yourself. Over Christmas, we finally introduced our kids to the Home Alone movies, right? This is the plot of Home Alone 2, minus the credit card. It's the same thing. We read that when Mary first realizes that Jesus is not with them, she and Joseph went to their friends and family looking for him, and I can only imagine that's an awkward conversation, right? We can't find Jesus. Have you seen him anywhere? No, but when was the last time you saw him? Maybe we can help retrace their steps. 3 days ago? 3 days ago? What? Like the super advanced Son of God kid you're always talking about, you lost 3 days ago? And then thank God they miraculously find him in the temple, and he's not just hiding out, he's gained an audience with all the teachers there. He's listening to them and asking them really hard questions. And the way the story's told, it's almost like we're getting a glimpse of Jesus in his element for the first time. Right? Like this moment he found his thing, his gift, his purpose. But then, as I love they included it, as any parent would, Mary marches up to him, and regardless of the teachers that are standing around, she says, "Son, why have you treated us like this? Don't you know your father and I have been anxiously searching for you?" And then Jesus comes back with this coded response about how they should have known he would have been in his father's house, and it goes over their head, and they all head home back to Nazareth. Now, we could do so many different things with this story, but the first question I just like want to toss around a little bit is, why would Mary and Joseph ever let this story get out? You know what I'm saying? With all the super cute things that happened in the first 6 weeks, 18 months, 12 years, why would you tell people the embarrassing story of you losing Jesus in Jerusalem for 3 days? Right? And we don't necessarily know where these early infancy narratives come from, but I have a sneaky suspicion that Mary is a part of it. Right? There's only so many people that had access to the stable and these intimate moments. And so why would you be sure? Why would you make sure that people knew about that one? The one where you totally dropped the ball and lost your kid. Which then caused me to wonder, do you guys have stories like that? An embarrassing story? Maybe as a parent? A moment that you'd rather forget than retell? By the laughter, I'm sure we all do. And so here's one of mine. All right, our daughter, Caroline, was maybe 4 or 5 months old. I was working as a Finnish carpenter while I was switching my ordination into the UCC. And about halfway through my workday, I got a call from Julia, who was devastated. See, she had been folding laundry on the bed while Caroline was lying on the bed watching. And as Julia walked into the other room, she heard a thud and a cry. And I'm sure you know where this is going. Caroline had fallen off the bed, landed on the hardwood floor, no fun. So Julie calls me at work, and I'm sure she's looking for some comfort and encouragement, but let's just say I might not have responded the best. Something along the lines of, "What do you mean you dropped our daughter? How does that even happen? Why would you leave her on a bed alone?" Right? It's one of those moments, one of those embarrassing stories that you wouldn't really tell people. You wouldn't want to get out. Unless your wife did it, then sure, include it in a sermon, right? In case you're wondering, I always get permission before telling family stories, and I got two thumbs up as long as I included the detail that this was, in fact, the very first time Caroline had ever rolled over in her life. It's an important detail for you to know. So fast forward 2 months. The school year's begun. Julie is back in the classroom teaching sixth grade, and now I'm a stay-at-home dad giving my time to a local church. Caroline and I are having an amazing day together, and then partway through a diaper change, she rolls herself off the very same bed, like right in front of me. But I have super quick dad reflexes. So I managed to grab one of her leg, which swings her body around, causing her head to hit the ground even harder than if I would have just let her fall. Yeah. Now, truth be told, if she didn't have a bruise on her forehead, I probably would have never admitted to dropping her, but it was pretty obvious something had happened. Parenting stories, embarrassing stories that you wouldn't want everyone to know, and then record, and then post on a church podcast later in the week. And so once again, I ask, why would anyone choose to tell these stories? Right? Why would Mary and Joseph ever let the embarrassing story of them losing Jesus get out? I think, as is the case with our own kids, the stories we tell about them, they shape the world's perception of them. Right? The words we use to describe our kids, the memories we recall in front of friends, it shapes the way they see our kids. And so what's the picture that these early stories, these infancy narratives, are trying to paint of Jesus? How are they trying to shape our perception of Jesus, right? The Christ. And I guess that's for each person to answer on their own. Right? What sort of Jesus do you encounter in these early stories? For me, I encounter a very complex kid. Jesus is special enough that angels announce his birth, and yet he's also born in a barn. He's filled with so much spirit that people are drawn to him every time he steps into the temple. And yet his parents forgot him and lost him in the city for 3 days. He is Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. And he's also a 12-year-old boy who does 12-year-old boy things. Throughout time and space, people have tried to construct for themselves gods who were as little human as possible, right? People want perfection and power and like otherworldliness. And yet we find ourselves celebrating a God who chose to be like us for a season, a God who knows how hard and embarrassing it can be as humans. For me, this story, it brings together the competing and yet surprisingly complementary claims of Jesus' divinity and humanity. He's just a boy, one that freaks out his parents and wanders off alone, but he's also one who recognizes that the temple was his father's house, and he seemed oddly comfortable in that space. And he'll be back, right? Will he be back in the temple? The next time, he'll be flipping tables and setting things straight. And we're going to do those stories too. That's for another day. But today we got a peek into his early development, his early sense of identity, his divinity and his humanity, thanks to a slightly embarrassing parental story. I don't know if Jesus ever ends up going on to drop a baby, but I do believe that he dropped a ball from time to time. And that's the beautiful mystery of the incarnation, the fully God and fully human thing. It's the good news, right? The good news that's great joy for all other humans, a God who gets it, a God who's human, and God, and human, and God. Confused yet? welcome to the club. Okay, I want to wrap this up with one last observation. There's a line about Mary that came up in today's story and is quite famous for coming up in the Christmas story. After she gives birth in Bethlehem, and after they finally find Jesus in the temple, we read that Mary, anybody catch it? Mary treasured all these things in her heart. And I've always thought that was such a cool line, right? In both stories, when the dust finally settles and Mary's made it through whatever hard or challenging situation she found herself in, we read that she treasured all these things in her heart. It's a simple line, but it seems to tell us something about the depth of Mary's character, right? That even the lowly parts, the hard parts, the embarrassing parts are worth treasuring. And why? It's because they're part of our story. They're part of what makes us us. Like Mary, in an odd way, I think Julie and I have come to treasure our embarrassing stories, our hard stories, our crazy curveball stories. They remind us, one, how lucky we've been every so often, how absent-minded we've been at times, how much we've needed each other at times. Right, we've learned to treasure these stories because they remind us what it is to be human. And so I hope this morning you enjoyed catching a glimpse of boy Jesus. I hope you take some parental comfort in knowing your pastor has dropped a baby. However, you might be more nervous during baptismal movement moments moving forward. It's one of my anxieties too, it really is. I hope you found an invitation to think through parts of your own story, and maybe even an invitation to treasure stories that had previously been filed away as never to tell again. And as is true every week, I hope that somehow, some way in our time together, you encountered God. Not the untouchable God in the sky, but the God that is anywhere, everywhere, always here with us. Now here's the deal. Since I've revealed how I dropped Caroline twice, I sort of have to make it up to her. Despite the possible head traumas, I think she's turned out really well. And at 11 a.m., her little kid rock band is performing in West Chicago, and I have to be there. So, following the benediction, I'm going to scoot. And if I don't have a chance to greet you, it's not you, it's me. It's okay. And it's all part of being human. And it's just an absolute joy. It's an absolute joy to be human among you. And so we'll see you next week. Amen.